On Christmas night, 1951, Harry and Harriet Moore settled into bed after their 25th wedding anniversary. As they slept, a bomb exploded underneath their bedroom. The two were civil rights activists well known for their work with the NAACP in Florida. Their deaths are often referred to as the first assassinations of the civil rights movement, taking place over a decade before the deaths of Edgar Evers, Malcolm X, and Martin Luther King Jr. Join us at the table today to discuss this couple's incredible work and the not-so-surprising suspects behind this unsolved case. Hi, everyone. Thanks for stopping by our Table of Disappointment. This is How They Got Away, the show where we discuss the unsatisfying endings to your favorite unsolved or unpunished true crime and corporate greed stories. I want to apologize ahead of time for some of the names of these places in this case. They're kind of outdated and would be somewhat considered offensive today. Unfortunately, this is from the time of segregation, and so these were the names. So blanket statement at the top.
Wig. Okay.
I want you to know Anna and I, during that opening, just were open-mouthed over here.
We were like, there's no way that, like, they could be a couple with such similar
No, I was thinking, like, they died on Christmas on their 25th anniversary. I was ready to be like, oh, that's so sad. And then it just got more wild from there. So I...
No, yeah.
I am at the edge of my seat.
Me like, oh my god, couple. And then I was like...
I feel like it's also so crazy that I didn't know about these two before.
I was gonna say, because... we know that the civil rights movement is, like, very, very cleaned up, like, for how they're going to teach it in history. It's very, like, I can't think of the word, but it's very, I guess, glamorized, or, like, kind of, they kind of cut out the, like, kind of gross parts or the kind of the worst of it. Like, because like, a really intense time, and we kind of just, like, I guess gentrify it, for lack of a better word, to, like, make it palatable for white people. So I think there's a lot of the, like, there's a lot of it that we just don't hear about and don't learn about.
Right. And I definitely think that the way that they passed, it's interesting because we do talk about Martin Luther King Jr. in elementary school, and we know that he was assassinated. But it's also interesting how we don't know about these two or talk about these two. But I feel like also for children, a bomb exploding is also kind of a lot.
I mean, shot is also kind of a lot.
About 9/11, so
yeah.
Remember back in the days where every September 11th, you would go into class and watch news feeds of the towers falling. Remember that? But it's also like, yeah, sure. For elementary kids, you don't want to come out with the hard stuff right away. Yeah. I understand that that's a lot for elementary school kids, but it's not like you don't continually talk about the civil rights movement right. In more and more detail with more and more nuance, or at least you should be, American school systems. So, like, I feel like a high school student, your average high school student,
exactly,
like, this is not that crazy for them.
Exactly.
Especially that's in today's world.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of my thought as well. But we're going to get into their lives and talk about them today. So if you are left out of the loop like I am, then we're about to talk about it a little bit.
Can I just ask, Ollie, did you pick this case specifically for February because it was Black History Month, or is it a coincidence?
No, I just found it.
No, because yeah, I also found a case. Spoiler alert, this will be later, and it probably won't even come out in February. That's the thing. These are not going to come out in February now that I'm realizing it. But mine is also similar. Like, I just kind of found it, but it's, like, also civil rightsy, and it will make you angry. So that's a fun spoiler. I can't wait to be so enraged today.
Oh my gosh. I wanted you guys to know that I was ranting to my roommate about this as I was writing it. There's so many parts of this I was like, oh my god, I am so sad. Like, what is happening? This is a very intense case, but they did a lot of great work. So let's get into it.
Ooh.
Harry Moore was born on November 18th, 1905 in Houston, Florida. He graduated high school at 19 and then went to Florida Memorial College. He did so well in his classes that his peers called him Doc.
Good Damn. For him.
He got straight A's except for a single B+ in French, which, like, it's another language. You get a pass.
Okay, but like I'm imagining such honest Annalise, I'm imagining a version of you that is like sitting looking at this B plus, like quivering in the corner of the cafeteria.
Okay, I want you to know that I got like one B plus in college, and yeah, yeah, I was really upset about it.
All right.
Annalise being like,
so correct.
I'm better than this. I'm better than this.
Your assessment, accurate.
Calling Annalise out. Damn. It was crazy.
You just know me too well. Anyway, in 1925, Harry moved to Mims, Florida to teach fourth grade at colored school.
Right away, we're in that time.
This was around the time that he would meet Harriet Vita Sims.
Oh my god. Can I just say that, like, he's, like, so smart and so, like, he could, this is segregation. This is a time where Black people and people of color did not get the same opportunities, much like today, but it's slightly better today. But, like, he chose to be a teacher. Like, there's clearly such a love of learning there for him. That's so cute.
And such a love of helping others.
Yeah.
Like, this man helps so many people and cares so much about his community. But we'll
I also imagine in his older years, he got really, really good at French to, like, spite that B+. I don't know why that's in my head, but I'm like, he, like, is so good at French.
I mean, honestly, being like, in the way that he, like, relentlessly, like, pursues things, I honestly think that, yes, that seems in his personality.
I feel like he probably is good at French, but it's probably, like, the tests are kind of whack. Like, sometimes you can learn a language, and then all the tests and stuff are like, this is bullshit. No one's going to be like, what are the...
True.
Well, honestly, in this area, like, it's kind of close to the more Creole diaspora, so it's possible, like, he spoke more, like, Creole French, but the test was, like, France French.
Which is very possible, yeah, because I know that, you both took Spanish, right?
Yeah.
Does it teach you, like, European Spanish or, like, Central America Spanish?
Our teachers, sometimes they would make distinctions. But there were definitely times where they were like, this is a Mexican Spanish thing.
Okay. Yeah. Oh my God, I know, like, that's also sort of a thing, too.
Because there's different things. Like, we learned vosotros, which is not widely used.
Oh, yeah. That's the it's only like thing I know.
Like, to America, you're fresh out from another country, and you start using thee and thous.
It's so weird. Anyway, we got to get off our French track.
Right.
To get back to these people, anyway, to this couple. So Harriet was born in West Palm Beach, Florida on June 19th, 1902. Her family would later move to Mims with her six siblings. During the summer, she would go to Massillon, Ohio with her father, who was a woodworker. So, you know, in the summer, she's like working with her father. She graduated from Bethune-Cookman College in Daytona, Florida with an Associates of Arts in 1941 and then a Bachelor's of Science in 1950. And can we just talk about how impressive this is? Not only was she a woman and got this kind of education at the time, but especially as a Black woman who had so many systemic barriers in her way.
And she was like late 30s, early 40s by that time too. So she was a little bit older when she got her educations. Also, I just realized this, like, they would have, like, been in their, like, late teens, early 20s, like, during the Great Depression, then.
They lived through the world, like, World War II.
Wait a minute. They lived through World War
One, World War II. You're right.
And the Great Depression.
They did. They lived through everything. All the troubles. We talk about later that there's some people who are veterans from, like, World War One, and then someone's uncle just came back from, like, Vietnam. Like, there's so many things happening.
Oh, my God.
I feel like it's hard to remember, like, the 19th century, like,
or Korea, I should say.
Very much like today, historical shit's happening every day, and it sucks.
It's crazy when you think about how many things, because, like, we learned about these things in such, like, bubbles.
Yeah.
That all of this happened simultaneously, and people lived through such a turbulent time.
It's like, it's to think of it in terms of one person's 20s is wild.
Yes.
Now we're having that, kind of. Also,
I know.
But
our great grandchildren would be like, Grandma.
Itself.
History Grandma, do you remember the 08 bubble, 2012, 2016, the 2020 pandemic?
Remember.
And you're like, oh, right, those all happened in like 20
whips
years.
Around. Do not speak of me of such evils. I was there when it was created. Partially, kind of, not really.
Anyway, so yeah, these people are living through very turbulent times. Not like for the whole of America, and then for Black people in general, for minorities in general. So much is happening.
And they're killing the game.
No, really.
They're doing great. Harriet then went on to teach elementary school at like a couple of different schools, and would actually cook lunch every day for the kids. Working at
right, because this is before like school lunch was like a fake thing.
Working at the schools is how she met Harry.
Oh my god, this is so cute. This makes me so extra sad for how this goes.
I know. They would then get married on December 25th, 1926, and would have two daughters, Annie Rosalia, who went by Peaches, and Juanita Evangeline, who went by Evangeline.
Those are so cute. Oh my god. Peaches?
Yeah.
Man. I can't believe they got married on Christmas. I know that like you kind of mentioned it earlier, but I was like, oh my god, they did get married on Christmas.
I realize
Happy birthday,
the timeline. Christ. Is kind of messed up. So she was like teaching, and then they like got married, and then she went to school later on.
No, right? You kind of said that would have been in her late. So wait, she is a mother,
yes,
and is getting her education in a time where it's already difficult for women, and especially women of color, to get an education at all. And she's like, fuck it. I'm getting my higher education. I have two kids at home. I'm an elementary school teacher. I'm a woman of color, and I am getting it. Get your bag, girl. God.
Yeah. So, like, just to be clear, so she got married before and had her children before she went to school. I realized that the way that I said this, I said she then went on to teach. She taught before she got her degrees.
Mm-hmm.
So just to make that clear.
Fair. Mm-hmm.
I will also say that there's not a ton on Harriet and her life, a lot of things, because Harry is kind of, he does a lot. But it's important to know that Harriet was there supporting and helping with a lot of his work, but she's not talked about as much.
And that's not uncommon. It's like, all right, well, Harry did these things, but you know, and then Harriet behind him. Right. Harry did these things. It's like, that's pretty common for women.
Mm.
Going back to our kind of timeline, Harry would later become a ninth grade teacher and the principal at Titusville Negro School.
Getting the principal?
Yeah, he's excelling. He's doing so well. He was excelling at school. He continues to excel at work. Sadly, he would later be fired for attempting to equalize pay for African-American teachers in the county.
Damn. Imagine firing someone because they're like, normal pay, regular pay.
His wife would also be fired, and the two were blacklisted by Brevard County Public School Systems for their advocacy work.
God damn.
Oh my God.
It really goes to show, like, the way that these kind of institutions will immediately close ranks the second you try to make any changes. I feel like it kind of goes with that changing the system from the inside can work, but sometimes it is not, especially for such long-standing, powerful systems.
Mm-hmm.
So speaking of activism and advocacy, let's get into some of that work. According to HarryHarrietMoore.org, the couple were the first true civil rights activists of the modern civil rights era in the state of Florida. Harry organized the first Brevard County branch of the NAACP in 1934 and became its president.
Ooh, get it, Harry.
He would later help coordinate chapters throughout the state, and in 1941 became the president of the Florida Conference of the NAACP branches.
Because, you know, you get fired from the job that you've been working at for years, And not only are you fired, you are blacklisted. You're not going to be able to find any work in this state. And what does Harry do? He's like, fuck this. I'm a unionize.
Hooray!
He's really for the people kind of person. Mm-hmm. You can tell in like everything that he does.
Mm-hmm.
In 1944, Harry formed the Florida Progressive Voters League and became its executive director. Harry was extremely successful in his efforts to expand Black voter registration. The league itself helped register over 100,000 Black voters in the state of Florida. He also, in general, increased the NAACP Florida branch membership during his time.
Get it, Harry. He really like laid the groundwork then for like later civil rights movements. It's like already getting people informed and mobilizing.
And especially because the state of Florida didn't have many people doing this at the time. Like he.
No.
And Harriet as well were really at the forefront of this. What Harry is possibly most well known for is relentlessly seeking punishment for those who committed crimes against African Americans in the NAACP. He served as an advocate against racial violence and lynching.
And I don't think we've talked about sundown towns in any of our episodes, but this is right around that time of like this level of unmitigated violence against African Americans, other people of color in the Americas. So it's like, this is needed. This is so needed.
There are two cases that he is most well known for. The lynching of Willie James Howard and the Groveland rape case. And his outspokenness and work during these two cases are believed to what have led to his murder.
What?
They hate to see a king winning.
So we're going to speak briefly about this. They hate to see a king winning. They also hate people who try to push too far. And honestly, he wasn't. But people don't like being pushed.
Damn. I want a better society, people. Kill him. Get his ass. Hey, get him.
People of color are people, and maybe you shouldn't treat them with violence. The system.
How could you say that
the
about
system,
our perfect system?
System, I am personally offended by that.
I made the system for people like me to succeed, and like you're against that? Die.
Anyway, so to give a brief summary of these cases, Willie James Howard was 15 years old. He was a 15-year-old African-American boy living in Live Oak, Florida. He was lynched on January 2nd, 1944, for first giving his co-workers Christmas cards at Van Priest Dime Store, but then also giving his co-workers Cynthia Goth, a white girl, a second letter on New Year's Day.
God, how dare he be nice to his co-workers? How dare he? Can we just say before we move on here, there are a lot of different lynchings, but I feel like the ones you hear about a lot are teenage boys just living the damn life. And I feel like, I don't know the statistics, but I feel like there's something to be said about the selection of victims of this kind of violence being young people who can't fight back as well.
It's really sad.
The text of the card is on Wiki if you want to read it. But really, he was saying in it that he liked her and he like begs her like not to tell anyone about this letter if she like didn't like it, and just like tell him and he would like forget all about it and like it wouldn't be a thing. Like he really begs her not to tell anyone, and he makes a note about it because he knows it would be trouble. And he makes a note about like, if we lived in the North, this wouldn't be as big of a deal. And I like, you know, we want to be friends. And like, I like you. I think you have like a beautiful smile. I think you're really great. And begs her, I think like three times, asks her not to tell anyone if she didn't like this, and just like let him know and he'll like drop it.
Please don't tell me she like told someone.
She did.
I'd rather have like someone else find out. I don't know.
Cynthia was offended by this and told her father, who was postmaster and former state legislator in Florida. her father, along with some others, went to Willie's house, held his mother at gunpoint, and dragged both Willie and his father out of the home at gunpoint down to a river, where he gave Willie the quote-unquote choice to either be shot or jump in the river.
Wow, what a choice.
Willie jumped in the river, and he drowned.
Damn. God damn. And can we just, for the record, he didn't do anything. He did
no, he had wrote, a crush.
He had a crush. It's not even like the letter was salacious or like explicit or anything. It was just, hey, I like you. I think you seem nice. And turns out she really wasn't. And then
and
that was it.
He starts it, dear friend.
Dear friend.
Oh my God.
And like, if you were real, like, you didn't have to do this. You didn't have to do any of this, dude. The dad. Like, if you were really so offended that this boy liked your daughter, give him a talking to. You could have just been like, hey, don't. And like, yeah, you're a racist piece of shit, but at least you didn't kill anybody. But no, he didn't do anything. This
racists
man's
are
dead,
a whole
probably.
Different breed, essentially. Especially during this time. So.
During this time, yeah, right.
And you really know, because he knew, like, he knew there'd be no, or assumed, because we were going to hear about how Harry was like, no, but he assumed, like, no one would care because that was, like, his business and that he was entitled to that.
Also, he's a man with power in this state.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So.
That's so yucky.
This case was of special interest to Harry because he grew up near Live Oak and was the former classmate of Willie's mom, Lula Howard.
No!
That's extra sad.
Harry had interviewed Willie's parents, and when the county grand jury didn't indict, Harry was able to get a federal investigation started. But
those are hard at the best of times to get going. Good for him.
Yeah.
Nothing came of it.
Of course not. Because again, the system is rigged.
Harry would continue to push law enforcement and wrote many, 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 many letters calling for the resignation of some of the police officers who were involved in investigating.
I think there's a little, the actual facts of surrounding the specifics of the case are definitely dated. But when it comes to the afterwards of police violence, like replace the dad with a cop who came upon some kind of scene with a young black man, this could be a today story.
Mm-hmm.
Like the fact that this could, I could hear about this today and I would be outraged but not surprised is frankly disgusting. And also I'm hearing you talk about it and I'm hearing you talk about how Harry is doing all the things that you're told that you should do. And all I'm thinking is you're making yourself a problem and the system like is known to silence problems. And I'm so worried for him, especially since we know what happens.
Yeah. He's really putting a target on his back with all this. But it's like, I think this definitely says what kind of person he is. Cause he's like, oh, this can get me in serious trouble. But this helps other people, so I don't mind. And I'm like, man.
He's really such a passionate and selfless guy. And really, like, he cares. Like, I've said this a million times. He cares about his community. He really does. So let's move on to the Groveland rape case, which is usually referred to as the Groveland 4. This case took place in Lake County, Florida in July 1949. Four African-American men, Ernest Thomas, 26, Samuel Shepard, 22, Walter Irvine, 22, and Charles Greenlee, 16, were accused of raping a 17-year-old woman and then beating up her husband. Ernest eluded capture and was brutally killed. Samuel and Irvine were sentenced to death, and Charles got sentenced to life in prison. I actually want to do a longer case on this, so we'll talk about details probably in my next recording.
Okay, but can we just, before we move on to how terrible racism is, Can you think of a single case in recent history where the rape of a woman garners such a high sentence?
I was literally talking about this with Zoe, where I was like, if replace this with four white guys, nothing.
Literally, they'd get, and they're like, oh, we're worried about their future, and then nothing would happen. Maybe they'd get 6 months probation, and that would be
looks
it.
At Brock
like,
Turner.
The fact
anyways.
That these people are of color changes this so drastically. Yes. It's ridiculous, and that it's a young white woman as the victim, because like, replace it with four white men's, have it happen today. No one is dying. That's not happening.
God.
As far as Harry's involvement, he organized campaigns to support the accused appeals, and two of the cases went to Supreme Court. Harry pushed hard for this case, which upset a lot of people, especially when Harry called for Sheriff Willis McCall to be suspended and indicted.
Because here's the thing, too. I know you said we're gonna talk about this more in its own case, so I don't want to get too into the details here. But, like, what is the evidence that they did this? Was it, like, witness statement from the victims?
Is it actually... Well, you're probably going to talk about this later, but is it like, oh, hey, these guys actually did this? Or is it white woman going, fuck these guys in particular? Because, unfortunately, that's a very common theme in this time. So I go,
Again, we're going to get into this later. I don't want to talk too much about it, because the things that happen surrounding this case are also pretty insane.
Ah, fair enough.
So overall, as we can tell, Harry was extremely vocal about his critiques of the justice system during the time of Jim Crow laws, which ended up putting a target on his back.
Yep.
So let's get to that fateful night. Christmas night, 1951. This was 6 weeks after his call for indictment of Sheriff McCall. That night, Harry and Harriet were celebrating their 25th wedding anniversary. Their daughter, Evangeline, was on her way home taking a train called the Silver Meteor and would arrive on the 27th.
That's a very fun train name. We should go back to this time where you name trains. And can we just hang on, we're gonna get into the yep.
Sorry,
go ahead.
Can we name plows? I want to name plows here anyway.
Like plow face.
Oh, yeah,
can we just, before we get into the horrible details and I get shocked into silence, can we talk about how this seems so purposeful? This is 6 weeks after he's called for this person to resign. You had kind of all the time in the world. You could maybe make the argument that they picked this date because they knew they'd be home. But there's something so... It is Christmas. You got... I'm going to assume that the alleged people who did this are claimed to be Christians. That's a way to celebrate Jesus's birthday for sure. It is an anniversary. Like, there's something about the picking of this date that seems so, such an extra fuck you.
Yeah. So intentional.
Yeah, exactly.
Even if it was just their anniversary on Christmas? On Christmas?
Can we just agree not to murder on
Christmas? Shit. Christmas? Can't you put aside your racism for like one holiday?
Every religion gets one day where you're like, we don't murder on this day.
We don't murder. We're going to like let people threat. Jesus would not approve. He'd be like, I did not.
Jesus wouldn't approve of murder in general, but can we all agree not on his birthday?
I think Jesus could potentially agree to murder because he does have like that one line where like some guy's like, I keep looking at like these prostitutes or something. And he's like, well, you should pluck your eyes out. Remove your eyes.
That's a you problem.
Yeah. So
Jesus,
I think,
is like, for you, an exception.
I think, well, I guess it's not murder. I feel like Jesus would be like, if you're a yucky person, you deserve bad things to happen to you. So
Jesus said karma's a bitch.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Rolling it back.
Oh, no. Right. No
so,
more Jesus.
That night, after the couple went to bed, a bomb exploded underneath their bedroom. The blast could be heard from several miles away in the next town over, Titusville. I'm going to show you guys a picture of the home.
Oh, dear.
Like before or after?
After.
Okay. Oh, no. Oh, so, okay, so it's a one bedroom, it's a one floor, they, like, snuck underneath the house to plant this bomb.
That's still, like, a lot of damage, wow.
Damn. The fact that the roof is still intact, though, that's surprising. I want to get in touch with their roof guy.
Harry would pass away from his injuries while being transported to Sanford, which was 30 miles away and the closest place that he could be admitted to as a black man.
Oh, right. I forgot that in this area, in this era, in addition to all the other racism, you can't even get treated in a normal hospital. There's no such thing as just a hospital. It has to be delineated by color because that's the stupidest shit I've ever heard. Like, it's all stupid, but you know when there's, like, levels to the stupid?
Yeah. This is level 9.
This is level 9.
Harriet lived long enough for her husband to be buried, but would die only 9 days after the explosion from her injuries.
Oh, it's amazing they both lived at all after an explosion like that.
Yeah.
For 9 days she suffered.
And, like, in agony. And also, this would be at a time where they, like, I believe this would be at a time, I don't quite recall when they stopped believing this, but there was a long time where they just believed that black women and black people in general, but also particularly black women, just, like, felt pain differently than white people. So they, like, wouldn't be given the same level of access to pain relief medication.
This is probably, like, around that time, I believe. I don't remember the date of the experiments when they did that, but I would not be surprised if they were like, yep, this time.
I know that those experiments are, like, shockingly late in the 20th century.
Mm, that's also very true. Can you imagine Evangeline, though? Because she's, like, on a train, and she comes, like, 2 days after the attack. Like, it's...
And there's no phones.
Let's talk about Evangeline.
Oh, no! Oh. Poor Evangeline.
Evangeline didn't hear about what happened until she arrived home as planned.
How would she?
Yeah, she said in an interview. I noticed that my mother and father were not in front of all my relatives to greet me, and they were always there.
Can you imagine the other relatives' faces too, like trying to like keep it together?
Her uncle George, who was on leave from Korea, had to break the news.
No.
And according to her account, he said, "Well, Van, I guess I'm the one who has to tell you. Your house was bombed Christmas night. Your dad is dead and your mother is in the hospital." End quote.
I mean, I have never had to give news like that to anybody. And I honestly, like, that's such a heavy sentence. But there's no way to sugarcoat it. You just have to
gotta rip the band-aid off.
These are the facts. No, yeah. I'm so sorry. And not only this, she didn't get home until the 27th, so she kind of had to miss Christmas with her family, which at the time you're probably like, that sucks, but you know, that's how the timing worked out. We'll still have, you know, until New Year's to hang out. And not only did you guys miss Christmas, your dad is dead. You'll never have another Christmas with him. And also, your parents dying is so already horrific. Her house is destroyed. Her childhood home is destroyed. I keep saying there's such an extra level of fuck you to this. It truly is an extra level of fuck you. This whole thing.
Evangeline, when she heard this news, insisted to be taken to the family home. Like, she needed to see with her own eyes.
I get that.
The damage extended beyond her parents' room and actually into the room that she had shared with her sister, Peaches. She was talking about how there's, like, beams from the ceiling were, like, crashed down, like, onto, like, the floor. Like, it was wrecked. Like, structurally, not safe at all anymore.
Nope.
What about Peaches?
Peaches was older, so she was probably moved out by this point.
I'm not sure what Peaches was doing at this time, honestly.
which is fair, because I was like,
they got married in 26, and this would have happened in the 50s, the early 50s, 51. Assuming they had children within the first 10 years of their marriage, their oldest kid would be like over 20.
Yeah, I think they're like 20s. Yeah, I don't know.
Which is fair, but like Evangeline like came home, so I was like, oh, I wonder where like Peaches is, because
I assumed like Evangeline was maybe in school or something.
Maybe.
But that's my assumption.
Mm-hmm.
I would guess.
I imagine this family values education.
Yeah, the only thing. I mean, she's alive at this time, according to, I'm going to say, again, I just looked this up. It's findgrave.com, so take that with a grain of salt. But
hooray!
It says that she lived until 1972 and was born in 1928.
Okay, that seems to fit with their timeline, though. Like, 2 years after they got married, they had their first kid. That tracks.
Back to the story, let's talk about what happened after and who may have done it. And I'm sure no one's going to be surprised what I say. Immediately, the FBI suspected the Ku Klux Klan.
I was going to say, like, there's just like a sort of like everybody turning to look in the direction of like a certain group of white people. Just like one little group of them, a little click.
As I said at the top, unsurprising suspects here.
The FBI walks in, walks up to one guy and goes, come on. Was it you?
Come on.
And the FBI did hundreds of interviews and even created a scale model of the home to simulate the explosion. Like, they were...
Okay.
Oh, wow.
I have a thought there, but I'm not gonna say it yet. I'm gonna wait to see what you say.
Okay. That being said, the KKK is a massive organization. So narrowing down its suspects is a hard task.
Oof. Then, like, just by being in the Ku Klux Klan, you immediately have a motive.
Yeah. Mm. Also, the Ku Klux Klan is very intimidating, not only to the people that they are perpetrating against, African Americans, but also to other white Americans. Like, I think sometimes, like, people are like, the KKK was terrifying for everyone.
Can we talk about how the KKK is just a cult whose only belief is racism?
Yes.
You walk around in white robes, that's the cultiest shit I've ever heard.
Yep. You hide your identity, like...
Tell me who you are, bestie. If you think you're doing what's right, you should show me your face. Show me your face.
So, the FBI would at some point narrow down their search to 3 members. Tillman H. Belvin and Earl J. Brooklyn, who witnesses said were going around asking for Moore's address, and one informant said that they had shown Brooklyn the floor plan of the home. And the way that this is often talked about, it seems like Brooklyn got this floor plan and then started to recruit people.
Interesting. Saturday night plans, sir?
Huh. The other suspect was Joseph Neville Cox, who, after 2 interviews with the FBI, killed himself.
Coward.
I was about to say that.
Pussy! Oh, the consequences of my actions! Oh! No. Bitch. Bitch.
The case was... failing to get evidence that it needed, since many of the witnesses refused to talk, and some of them who had already given testimony backpedaled on what they said or refused to testify. Again, the power of the KKK coming into play there. No one else wanted to put a target on their back. On top of that,
I would also say, like, sorry, the neighborhood was likely predominantly people of color that the Moores lived in. So,
yeah.
Any witnesses who saw anything that night are people of color and know
for sure
exactly what the KKK thinks of them and is capable of. So there's definitely that aspect, but also like police treatment of Black people even as witnesses is not great. So
right.
like there's distrust there even to begin with, even if you want to help.
Back to what was happening. So they're failing to get evidence. And then Belvin and Brooklyn both died of natural causes.
Oh my God, that's so crazy. So crazy how that just kind of happens.
Interesting.
Are we sure it was natural causes? Sorry. Is retribution
Zoe asked the same thing.
We are the same.
I don't even have like the cause of death. I don't know what happened to these men.
Oh.
Okay. Okay.
So yeah, Tillman and Earl, I don't know what happened to you, but
what they deserved. Bitches.
So this case would end up being closed until Brevard County Sheriff Roland Zimmerman reopened the case in 1978. During that time, a man named Edward L. Spivey, who was dying of cancer, gave testimony that Joseph Cox had planted the dynamite at the Moore household. Edward had been openly against the case reopening, and, you know, he was like really against it, and people became convinced that he was also part of what happened that night and possibly part of the plot, and because he's dying of cancer, felt guilty before he passed away, even though like he was so against it reopening. But when someone came and asked him, he told them.
I was also gonna say, like, with his admission, like, how would you know that if you weren't involved?
Exactly.
Yeah.
However, Sheriff Zimmerman lost his re-election, and there was never a prosecution of Edward, and he died soon after.
I don't know how I feel about sheriff being an elected position or not.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not saying I'm against it, but I don't know if I'm for it either, because then you have kind of issues like this. I don't know. Because, like, clearly we were making headway here, and then the next guy just decides, like, not to follow up on it.
Yeah.
But also, the next guy is voted in, so y'all picked him.
This case would open and close a number of times, and even in 1991, when Florida's governor ordered a new investigation, and even though they had Klan informants, there were no indictments.
Man.
Because this may or may not have been, like, Klan sanctioned. Like, in a general sense, violence against African Americans. I'm not a Klan member, if that wasn't super obvious. I don't know how the Klan works, but I understand general violence is pretty accepted within the Klan. But, like, this is probably wasn't like a everybody had a meeting and was like, all right, we're gonna do this, you're gonna plant the bomb. It might have just been, these are people who are pieces of shit who are in the Klan who decided to do this,
right?
If that makes sense.
In 2004, the Attorney General ordered another investigation, and after interviewing over 100 people, came to the conclusion that Tillman H. Belvin, Earl J. Brooklyn, Edward L. Spivey, and Joseph N. Cox had carried out the bombing. The FBI agreed. The FBI agreed in 2008. In 2011, there was an attempt to reopen the case, but ultimately, it was closed by the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division.
Hmm.
I mean,
just how it currently lays unsolved.
This is what I agree with you with the top where you heavily emphasize unpunished. This is one of those that we cover occasionally where it's pretty obvious who was responsible, but they never saw any retribution or punishment for it. And technically, like, if you look up this case, there's no, like, this is who did it anywhere. Right. And the Moors never received justice for this.
No. I do want to give, before we wrap up, a little talk about the legacy of the Moors.
Mm.
It is undeniable that they had a significant impact on the world in the civil rights movement. After the bombing, there was a number of protests registered with the United Nations in the South, And the NAACP hosted an event at Madison Square Garden where a song with lyrics written by famous poet Langston Hughes called The Ballad of Harry Moore was performed.
That's cute. Mm-hmm. I do notice Harriet also died, guys. Just a little ding there, but okay.
In 1952, Harry Moore was awarded the Spingarn, and I'm sorry if I pronounce this wrong, Spingarn Medal by the NAACP in 1952 as a NAACP leader in the state of Florida and a martyr in the crusade for freedom.
Yeah, because like we said earlier, he and Harriet laid a lot of the groundwork that future leaders like Malcolm X and Martin Luther King Jr. and others eventually would use. It's, you know, without this groundwork, would they have been as successful? It's hard to say. There's a lot that goes into that.
Today, there is the Moore Memorial Museum and Park. The website description reads, "The Moore Museum explores the history of the Moors through interactive exhibits, historic collections, dynamic speakers. In contrast to yesteryear's civil rights movement, we also examine today's global civil and human rights issues." End quote.
The fact that these two are not, at least for us, like we can only speak for our education experience, but I had not heard of the Moors in relation to the civil rights ever, I don't think, or they were very, very lightly touched upon. You might make the argument it doesn't really fit in with the other civil rights time frame, but it's incredibly important. They laid the groundwork. This led to the civil rights movement. Crazy. And they died for it. They died for this cause, but we forgot about them.
A replica of the Moore home currently stands in the same place as the original, and the interior is decorated to look like what it did that Christmas night before the bombing.
Oh my gosh.
With like a Christmas tree and stuff.
And that is all I have for this case.
Okay. I didn't say anything because I wasn't sure if you were going to say it or not. But before we wrap up here, I do have to wonder, based on other things we know about the civil rights movement and the FBI's proclivity for removing threats to quote-unquote national security and their alleged involvement in Malcolm X and Martin Luther King Jr.'s deaths, have to wonder if there was maybe some involvement here. I'm not saying they sent an FBI operative to take out the Moors, but we know that the Ku Klux Klan had connections with a lot of people in high places around this time. I don't think it is a giant leap to wonder, after the upteenth letter this man sent to the FBI over racial and civil rights issues, if perhaps somebody made a phone call and was like, "Hey, can somebody maybe take care of our quote-unquote problem?" I have to mention it because I don't – that's kind of a big show of the FBI to then show up to – sure, it's a bombing. That's kind of a wild thing to have happen. But if two Black people were murdered in a town in any other way – and it wasn't people who were heavily involved in civil rights, would the FBI have gotten involved? I ask you this.
I ask you this, like, fellow Americans.
I don't know. It's like a very "the lady doth protest too much" a little with how heavily they seem to have gotten involved with this. They're interviewing hundreds of people. They build a replica of what the home looked like before the bombing. Like, that seems like a lot of effort on the FBI's part. I ask you where this effort was for other murders at the time of African-Americans. I don't know. These are important people within the civil rights community. From my more modern perspective, I don't believe that the FBI cared that much about African-American people at this time. I feel like it bears mentioning.
Yeah.
And we know that they later sent letters to Martin Luther King Jr. telling him to kill himself. So it's like they're not above it.
Right. And that is where we're gonna end for today. I do want to say I did imagine our table like in the yard of the house after it exploded.
Oh, we're like having a little tea, like a little southern. We got some sweet tea.
Okay, I don't know if I'd go that far. I mean, we are
no sweet tea for you. It's the South.
Okay, I thought like, about it in the sense that we are next to a bombed home.
Oh, not like the replica. We're actually at the... Oh.
I kind of do imagine... Oh, yeah. The bombed home. I do kind of imagine that Kelsey has, like, a board with pins and the FBI now.
It's like just the FBI, like, circled several times.
Kelsey in that one meme from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and she's like, look! Look at their involvement! And we're like...
That says, mm-hmm. Never trust the institution.
You just have ACAB all over.
I just have ACAB all over.
Anyway.
You're right.
That's where we end for today. Thank you guys for joining us. I hope that you learned something from this. If you guys have more information about Harry and Harriet Moore and their lives, please feel free to comment. I was so fascinated by this case. I kept digging and digging and finding more. I mean, they did so much in the span of like 10 years. It's incredible. But that's where we'll leave you guys. So push in your chair. Have a good day. Stay safe. Speak out against the wrongs of society. And we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Never trust the FBI. Have a good one.